It's nice to see some new yellow aguesses in the room. When the Buddha taught, he was fond of including lists in his teaching. This might be just because he liked lists. Some people do like lists. But it's probably because nobody was writing anything down. Buddhism was an oral tradition to begin with, and one way of remembering things easily is to put them in a list. Sometimes you see the same list with a slightly different number of things in, which is probably also because Buddhism is an oral tradition and things don't always get remembered perfectly. So in the Pali Canon, the collection of sutras that are used in Theravada Buddhism in places like Sri Lanka, you will see a list of 10 perfections, whereas in the Mahayana sutras that are used in China, Korea, Vietnam, Japan, Tibet, you see the 6 perfections, but broadly the spirit of the lists is the same. The 6 perfections in Sanskrit, it's the 6 paramitas. Paramita means other shore, and this was an image that the Buddha often used to describe enlightenment, or as Pure Land Buddhists we can say the Pure Land. We are on this shore of a great river, like the great rivers that you get in India, if you like, and the Pure Land is on the other shore, or Nirvana is on the other shore. So there is some sense of a separation of our ordinary lives now and of the completed spiritual life, which is the other side of this great river. And in this list of 6 perfections, the Buddha compares each of the qualities, and he talks about the ordinary version of this quality, and then he talks about the other shore version of this quality. So the first one is, in Sanskrit, dana, which means giving or generosity. We have a dana bowl that we receive offerings in, for example. So the Buddha compares ordinary giving or compassion, generosity, with the generosity of somebody from the other shore. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that difference this evening. So somebody from the other shore is a completely liberated being. We could say that bodhisattvas is the home of the Buddhas and bodhisattvas on the other shore. And one thing we know about Buddhas and bodhisattvas is that as they move through the world, they don't leave any karmic traces. They don't lay any karmic seeds compared to ordinary people. Whenever ordinary people like us take an action, it leaves some karmic trace in the world. And usually we think of karma as associated with bad actions particularly. So if the impulse comes up in me to be rude to somebody and I act on that impulse, in acting on that impulse, I'm also laying down a karmic seed for the future, so that sometime in the future that seed will flourish and I will again have the impulse to be rude to somebody. If the impulse to come up to be rude to someone comes up in me and I don't follow it through, then I'm not adding any energy into that cycle. I'm not planting future seeds. But most of the actions that we do plant future seeds. And the same for ordinary beings, the same is also true of good actions, although we often talk about merit instead of karma when we talk about good actions. So if the impulse to be generous, dana, comes up in me and I act on that, it lays down the seed for future acts of generosity, and that's a good thing. But it's still only ordinary generosity. What's the difference between ordinary generosity and the generosity of somebody on the other shore? Well, before I answer that question, let me say that the reason for creating karma out of good acts or out of bad acts or neutral acts is that those actions come from a place of trying to maintain unconsciously trying to maintain a particular identity. So, if we believe we are the sort of person who does good, then the actions that we do will reinforce that belief. And that's okay, some good will still get done if we act out of that place. But we're still acting from a place of considering our own identity or ego as much as, or even more than, the actual act of generosity that we're doing. So when the other shore person does generosity, they don't leave any karmic trace. They don't lay down any new karmic seeds because they're not interested in looking like a good person. They don't expect anything back from their act of generosity. It's like me buying a present for somebody that actually I really want. So I buy them a box set of something because I want to borrow the box set off them. Well, that's, you know, there is some generosity in that act, but there's also something about my need that's been played out. Whereas the bodhisattva looks at somebody and thinks, actually, they don't want that box set that you want to watch. They're actually really interested in model trains, I don't know, which I'm not interested in. So there's nothing in that for me, but here's a model of a, you know, G500 XYZ, whatever it is, for that person. And not only that, if that person doesn't like it and gives it away, it's fine. It's out of the, once it's given, it's let go of. Because there's no expectation of receiving anything to feed the bodhisattva's identity in return. And the reason they don't need to lay down any new karmic seeds is because naturally good thoughts will arise in them. Once they've achieved some measure, the less tightly you hold on to your own identity, the more you consciously or unconsciously hold on to your own identity, the more self-protective you are, the more defended you are, the less likely random acts, natural acts of generosity, kindness, patience will spring up in you because, for various reasons, you're protecting yourself in a particular way. As those become looser, what you're allowing is almost that other shore spirit to move through you. So you don't need to worry about laying down good seeds, which in a way is worrying about. When you do an act of kindness, if you're thinking, well, I'll do this because it means that it's going to be easier for me to be good tomorrow, there's a part of you that doesn't have faith that you'll be good tomorrow. If you can let go of whether you, and that's probably to do with how people see you as much as it is to whether you're good or not, or even how you see yourself. So it's all tied up in self-image rather than trusting that. Actually, if I'm in touch with the other shore, naturally good thoughts will arise and flow through me, and I'll be able to be generous without worrying about whether they put that picture that I bought up on the wall, or whether that jumper, or whether they just bring it out once a year when I come to visit them. the bodhisattva doesn't worry about any of those things. Another way of looking at it is through the window of what in Zen are called the three pure precepts. The first one is to do no evil. So this is about that first thing I talked about, noticing when the impulse to do harm comes up and restraining it. That's a really good thing to do because it prevents the harm being done to the other person. But that's the action of an ordinary person, if you like. That's the training of an ordinary mind. The second precept is to do only good. And that's like ordinary generosity. That is consciously deciding to get a gift for somebody because you know it will be a good practice for you and for the other person. So it's done in that way. And you expect to get something back from it. But it's a step up from doing no harm. So not only is the other person not harmed, they also receive something, even if your ego also receives a bit of something in the process. And the third pure precept is do only good for others, so not yourself, which really is about trusting that. It's about doing good for others without expecting anything back for yourself. And that can come from a sense of faith in two things. One is that those actions will continually flow from you. But the other is that actually when you're in touch with the other shore, when you're in touch with Amida or the bodhisattvas, you're actually in a place of receiving enough love yourself that you don't need to worry about maintaining your ego. Because maintaining the ego comes from a place of insecurity. Doing harm comes from a place of insecurity. If I don't protect myself in this way, I'm going to be overwhelmed. Something bad will happen to me. The same is true of ordinary doing good. If I don't behave in this way of doing good, there will be some consequences for me that I'm not prepared to deal with yet. Actually, if you don't have that insecurity, if you have faith that Amida accepts you as you are, if you have faith that good things can spring forth from you naturally, if you have faith that without that protection, actually, things will still be okay because the other shore is some way taking care of you, the beings from the other shore are some way taking care of you, then you don't need to worry about defending yourself. And when you're in that position, you can give much more easily. And even as I've described it as a system with like three parts, that's still the description of an ordinary being talking. Dhammavijja said a couple of days ago, you don't intend to be generous or to enlighten people, because intention is a conscious act. That's the act of deciding this person needs this X, Y, or Z, and I'm the person to give it to them. Actually, when the Buddha's in that situation, when the Bodhisattva's in that situation, there's a need, there's the response, and then it's forgotten about. And there's no calculation involved. And then you move on to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And in that kind of act of giving, two things are received. Not only the little model train or the Christmas jumper or whatever it is, but also a spirit of love and trust and of complete faith in the other person, accepting it and doing what they will. What happens in that moment is that as well as giving the physical object, you give something much more important, which is the spirit of the bodhisattva, the spirit of the other shore. And we can say the word for that is love.